And Tommy.
Oh, Tommy.
Get it, Tommy. It's a little frightening.
I am Jimmy, alcoholic.
Jimmy.
Tommy T, alcoholic.
Tommy T. And my task is to read all the questions, and Tommy's going to answer them all, so this is going to be fun.
Can Tommy read?
No, that's why I'm doing the reading. He can't read.
Right, with the disabilities.
Yeah.
I love me.
And if you're not familiar with what we're going to do, this is called Stump the Drunk Hour, okay? So we're going to figure out if we know these things. We're going to make stuff up so it doesn't make a difference. And we have our crack committee in front of us. We could always phone a friend, too, if we don't know.
You're my friend.
Okay. Would you use the plain language big book to start a newcomer on his first AA experience?
No. No, I definitely would if he had a reading impediment or anything like that. I think it's all good. I would just try to stress the things that were stressed to me in that book. I had some fixed ideas about that when it came out, but if it reaches people, the average reading level in the United States is sixth grade. And if the words were too much, look, if you have a sponsor, they can explain it to you. They can get you that dictionary like my father rammed down my throat. But I think it's all good. So I'm not on that real conservative side of AA where it's got to be my way, the highway, or the way I did it was the way. So if it can help another alcoholic and if they can read it by themselves and explain it, you know, and get the message they need to hear, I think it's fine.
Thank you, Tom.
What about you, Jim?
Nothing.
Sure. Yes.
Right. Harold's done a lot of work with that book in prisons and jails. Where it wouldn't reach other people, that he became a real champion for us. There's a point that there's a perfect place where it might be even thinking.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. Thanks.
Yeah, and if anyone wants to have a conversation with me about that, I'll be happy to have a conversation outside the rooms. Because I was a delegate when that book got passed at the conference. And I had to read 963 pages of background material on that book. It's an accessibility issue that's not written for me. It's not written for him. It's written for the guy who can't read and can't comprehend. And I had an experience with a guy who was 39 years sober and asked me to take him through the steps. He came to my kitchen table and I said to him, I asked him to read something and he looked up at me, the tears started to flow down his face. He said, I can't read. And that's when I understood that this book is for somebody, but it's not put for me. So if you want a lot of background material and spend about 2 days of reading, just see me after this meeting. All right. Best and or worst sponsorship experiences.
Meeting when we sponsor, is that how we're looking at that?
Yeah.
What makes the best sponsee? Willingness. What makes sponsorship so frustrating? You can't give them willingness. But I have had, it is the joy of my life. I mean, we read that book so many times and so many, it is the joy of my life to see the lights go on with a young man or even an older man who may be, and the biggest ones for me is not just the newcomer. It's the guy that's been here for some years. And all of a sudden he realizes, so I'm in the fellowship, I'm doing a little service, but what's these steps about? And then they start to live this life the way that we do and start to have an experience. It is the number one thing in my life that brings me joy, next to my kids. It's just incredible to watch. So, I mean, just in general, that is the best sponsorship experience you can have. The worst, probably had 10 or 15 guys die. You know what happens? I get attached to the guys. You know, you just can't listen to a fifth step and see a grown man cry and really pouring it out and trying. And then something, usually success, takes them away from us. They think they're doing it. And you see it happening. And you just want to slap the shit out of the guy and just bring him back in, but you can't. And then you get the call. And then you got to go talk to his mom or his wife. That's brutal. It's happened a lot. It's happened way too much for me. So thanks.
Yeah, same thing along those lines. You know, that's what I thought. The first thing I thought was to get a phone call from a wife or a mom or a dad and letting you know that, you know, someone you sponsored just died. And I was sponsoring a guy. He was 20 years sober at the time, and I just had my back operated on, and they put a drain in my back. And he would come over every day and clean out that drain for me because I couldn't obviously get to my back. And one day he didn't show up, and I call up his wife, and she said, Walter's not coming anymore. I said, what are you talking about? She goes, Walter's not coming. I go, he comes every day. What are you talking about? She goes, Jimmy, we found him hanging in the bedroom today, 20 years sober, with his two daughters at his feet, looking at him hanging. And that was probably one of the hardest calls I've ever got, or probably the worst call I ever got with anyone I ever sponsored. But then we look at the flip side, and we see the best thing that ever happened is when that guy, that new guy, that young guy, or old guy, whoever, that new person in the back row, all of a sudden, row by row by row, taking actions he doesn't even believe in, gets to the front row, and you see him recreate his life, start a family, get a job, all the gifts of sobriety, and that is the best thing. You know, it's, again, not cash and prizes here, right? All right, Tommy, I think this one's going to be a good one for you. Oh, yeah. After you get a sponsee through the 12 steps, how do you continue to work on spiritual growth with them?
Well, we take maybe a week off after reading a vision for you when we start the traditions. And we talk about service and what that looks like. And then they're invited to join, like, book studies that we do. I got invited to one out here on Zoom, and it was just great. Although I felt I was a little late to the party getting into the reading, there's nothing like reading a book with a bunch of guys and everybody taking their own take on what they read, the chapter you had to read that thing. And then there's the three knuckleheads that didn't read it, of course, but they want to share, you know, and you just don't let them share. Like, if you haven't read the material, you can't share. But I try to keep the guys engaged, and I do a thing called Big Book and Bagels on our deck. It's a New York thing. And the guys that I sponsor, the guys they sponsor, they come over once a month in the warmer weather, and we get anywhere from 20 to 40 guys on the deck. And it's like this. It's just a level of sharing, because we're all brothers in this, and it's just two or three guys break down on the deck with something every time we're there. The guys love it. And then at the end of the year, we do a catered breakfast at the house. You know, we're doing some renovations in our home now, my wife and I, but my wife has had a big shift over the last 10 years, sponsoring a ton of women now. And we're just excited that we're going to have an open concept so we can entertain more AAs at our house. And we keep engaged. You know, the book tells us we walk hand in hand with the newcomer on this journey. You don't just take them through the steps and say good luck. You know, there's a lot of friendships that build out of that. There's a lot of, you see them grow. You see them have kids. You see them, the whole bit, man. I've been asked to marry one of my guys. I had to get one of those three-minute minister things online. And it was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me, man. It was just, I took it serious. I had Pastor Harold telling me what to do. You know, it was just awesome. And so I stay engaged with the guys. And now that I'm retired, I'm probably up their asses a little bit more than they'd like to. But I stay engaged with my guys. Thanks.
You look pretty good on Zoom over there.
Skinny, right?
Yeah, you look skinnier. Must have been the light lunch.
No, it was the cost of lunch.
Yeah, yeah. Light in the pocket. Oh, my God. This is probably Mike Powers here. Wanted to get your thoughts on behavior. Example, choking your ex-wife. Thanks. The soccer game, that was post-sobriety. I can't even read this. What tools in your
sobriety. Have you used? Come on, it's not that hard, Jim.
Trying to think of an answer. Wanted to get your thoughts on my behavior, right? It was terrible, my behavior, you know? I can remember a day that happened yesterday. You see, when you're living a double life in Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll always co-sign the behavior that you're doing, right? And you'll take it out on others. And there's really no excuse. I'm not being accountable to anyone. I'm not stealing with my sponsor or iron versus, you know, iron on iron, or whatever that language is, with someone else. I'm just doing what I want to do. I'm living a secret life in Alcoholics Anonymous. Anger, fear, rage, every other character defect is back in the game. So it doesn't really surprise me what I did. It surprised me in that moment that I was capable of still being a violent person with 13 years of sobriety, or 10, whatever it was around that time. So, so what tools am I recovering, you know? Again, inventory, prayer, sponsorship, service work, helping others, being involved, getting in the middle of the herd. I mean, it's not a complex solution here. It's about getting in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous and start living this thing rather than just talking about this thing. So I don't even know if that helped you, but getting back in the game, as good old Bob B would say, get in the game. In early AA, they mailed out big books. People traveled. The home group was not stressed like today. What if people travel all that and cannot make a home group every week?
Well, I mean, nowadays we have Zoom, right? I mean, so that answer would change. Home group is important to me because there's folks in my home group that'll say, hey, Tommy, how you doing? And I'm saying, I'm doing fine. And two of them are pulling me off to the side, like, what's really going on? They just know when I'm not fine. You know, that's the benefit there. And it's a place that keeps me grounded with a commitment. So, you know, we have to work around our schedules. I mean, it's okay to live in AA for years when you first come in and always attend meetings and do all the things that we do here. But, you know, life gets busy and you have to do it. But you got to put this first. This is what gave us the busy life. That's where people start to... So the home group, the emphasis on a home group, I get it. It's the same people, men, women, a men's group. Awesome. You guys are calling each other on your stuff all the time. It's a level of accountability. But, you know, I don't think that if you don't have, quote, a home group you can make because of a rotating schedule, or you go out on a ship for, you know, 6 months at a time or whatever it is, you just have to adjust your program of recovery. And it's more accessible to us than ever now. So, you know, you just got to stay in that game. And you can always call your sponsor. You can always touch base with the guys. You can always Zoom with people now. You know, I don't know that the home group, look, I'm not saying you don't need a home group. I do. I always have. I've been in the same home group for 28 years. I've wanted to leave it 56 times, probably about twice a year. You know, I get a resentment and want to leave, but my sponsor just says you can leave when you don't have the resentment anymore. Then I write that little inventory about it, find that I owe the group an amends, and I go back with my tail between my legs, and it's the greatest home group in the world again. Home groups are real important, but I think you can work around that in today's lifestyles.
Beautiful. Give us your experience with Concept 9.
That's Mike for you.
No, I know. For those who don't know Concept 9.
And it's in crayon.
Yeah, it's in crayon, so I know it's Mike. There you go. I encourage everyone to read Concept 9 and Bill's essay in there about leadership. Because you could take that thing and bring it into your professional life and you'll be a better boss, right? And there's a few things that Bill poses in that leadership essay about, you know, if you are a leader in Alcoholics Anonymous, whether you're, you know, your GSR for your group or a DCM or an area chair or a delegate, you know, there's a few things you got to be ready to do, and that's take the heat and take criticism. But be also be a person that has vision and a plan. And how do I want to help my, let's just say my district or my area be a better and stronger area, you know? And and I think that's, you know, Bob, you know, Pizan's, he was a delegate in 1979. That's like when dinosaurs were around, you know? And I remember I called him up and I said, Bob, I'm gonna make myself available to become the area chair for my area in Northern New Jersey. And he said, great. He goes, I just want to let you know one thing. I said, what's that? He goes, make sure you bring your recovery to your service work. And I thought that was like some old timer just throwing out a little nice line until I became the area chair. And then I understood what he was talking about. And a lot of what he was talking about in that short little bring your recovery to service is all about leadership, right? There's no bosses in AA, right? We're all trusted servants. We get elected based on our experience and positions that we have. And as a result of that, you know, but what I always encourage people do, you're in the business world or any kind of business, just read that. And how can that apply to me to be a better person? We talk about bringing the traditions into our relationships. Well, we could bring the concepts into our business life too. And I really encourage that for anyone. Man, that was a good answer. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks. That was like a layup, right? All right, Tommy. How can I start being a partner or a spouse to my wife instead of just a roommate? Her words. Emotionally available, intimacy, etc. That kind of stuff.
So I think it was in Tim Hyland's daily readings that are out there now that I've been using and sending out to my guys. I think it's the last chapter or the final chapter, and he writes these little things. And the one, I used the quote before, but it said, you know, what you're not changing, you're choosing. So if that's how your wife or your partner feels, that's a reality, whether you believe it or not. It's their perception of you. So you can even turn that and say, what do I have to do to change that perception? I'm sure that you do some things like a roommate. I wake up every morning, fellas, and I pray to be the best husband I can be to my wife. I thank God from the bottom of my heart that he sent her to me. And things aren't always great in our home. I'm not trying to paint that picture at all. We got the money stresses, we got the kids, we got the grandkids, we got everything going on there. You know, I'm not getting it all the time I think I should. This is my house. What are these kids doing here, you know? Put a bolt on the door, honey, you know? It's time for us, that kind of stuff. I can get real selfish with it. But when I started praying that prayer many years ago, I got the best wife in the world. Just by me trying to do things. You know, by having a sponsor who told me, you can't show up for your wife, then your program's full, you're full of shit. You know, that plain language that my sponsor can use to shock me out of something. What can I do better? So I'm going to tell you a thing that I do at every men's retreat. That's why my wife will never tell me not to go to a men's retreat. I don't care if this was next weekend and it was Christmas. She'd say, no, go, go, go. Because I'm going to come home. I'm going to tell her what a nice time I had. The guys are sick, honey, just like us. It's a lot of fun. They talk a little funny. They drink Pellegrino. It's crazy, but but I'm going to sit, and she knows it's coming. Knee to knee, I'm going to hold her hands. We're going to say a prayer, and I'm going to say, honey, what can I do better? Where am I falling short? Now, I've done this probably about 10 or 15 times over the years, over maybe the last 10 years, and a lot of times she'll say, honey, I am so happy. We have a blessed life. And then there's other times she's got a list. And I just go into prayer and I pause, and it's not personal. It's her perception of my performance. I'm trying every day. When my wife is getting on me for something and I'm really trying, I say, honey, but you can't tell me I'm not trying. And she said, I think that's what we'll put on your tombstone. He really tried. And she didn't mean that in a sarcastic way, because she knows I'm praying to be a better father and a better husband. Just want to be a good guy, man. I'm tired about being that piece of shit. Just it's old now. I'm old now, you know. And pray to be the better partner you can be, and you will be. There's some actions to be taken, but you will be. If you're just accepting that's the case, you're choosing that. That's as high as you're going to get in your relationship, a roommate. Get a guy. It's easier. You know. But if you're going to be with that woman, be a partner. Talk about your fears with her. Tell her what's on your mind. Don't be afraid to open up to it. You know, so that's worked with me. So thanks.
One of the tools I found for myself that has helped my relationship from that is me and my wife make a daily commitment to meditate together. You know, she'll do her prayer life and I'll do my prayer life and I'll read my books. She reads her books. But then we agree to meet right after that in our living room, our family room. And, you know, we'll put on a guided meditation. We'll take a silent meditation. There's a million and one ways to meditate. But it's very intimate in the fact that after we are done meditating, we talk about how we feel, what came to you, what's going on in your heart right now. You know, and it just gets to know each other a little bit deeper than just, hey, I'll see you after work, or I'm going to the gym, or something of that nature. Simplicity, right? And we think we need a big answer for that. No, it's just about taking the time to put effort and spirituality, bringing the principles into your relationship. All right. Speaking of meditation, when I meditate and go into a deep state of bliss, my mother-in-law takes me outside to the street and puts a tin cup beside me and empties the cup every hour. How do I forgive her? I'll read that again. Oh, there are pencils in that cup. When I meditate and go into a deep state of bliss, my mother-in-law takes me outside to the street and puts a tin cup beside me and empties the cup every hour. How do I forgive her?
I don't know. Don't look at me. It's concept 10, Jim. Take it. Oh,
yeah. Read 9 first, and then I'll get to 10.
If there's a serious question in there, ask it later.
Well, maybe your mother-in-law is just perplexed by your spiritual growth that's going on, and she's making maybe a little mockery of your practice of meditation. Maybe that's it. So we forgive her, and it's not that important. Keep meditating. That's the answer. Thank you so much for the wonderful weekend of wisdom. This is for either man. This is for Tommy. If you had to take a guess, oh, this is definitely for you, what hair care product do you think Richie uses for that beautiful mullet? We might as well open the door on Richie, right? We might just start talking about it.
No, I'm going to pass, man.
All right, we'll pass it.
It's a spiritual retreat. It's an easy target, but...
It's called baby bomb.
I'm sure it is.
All right. Dad died when I was just a kid. Never had a stepdad. I'm 69 years old and never got to say goodbye. How can I say that now? I loved him.
Have you ever done something at the graveside or a place of spiritual importance to you? So, I had to make 4 amends quickly because I had balked that first time through with George. I stopped seeing George at meetings. I stopped doing those things. And I got sick real quick. I was having a bond-burning experience going through those 12 steps, and I was screwing it up with fear. I couldn't go to those guys I owed all that money to and everything. And then I was asked outside how God works through the fellowship. I'm outside of a beginner's meeting, because that's where I went, instead of going where my sponsor was. And I would say, I'm 18 months sober, and I'm in step 9. And they'd say, slow down. What are you going so fast for? You're going to drink again with this. And I'm like, yes. I told George we were moving too fast, you know. And I was almost suicidal again in less than 10 days. And this guy comes up and pats me on the back. And he says, hey, Tommy, I heard you doing the steps with George. And I said, well, yes, I am, you know. And he said, would you speak at St. Mark's Step this weekend? I said, absolutely. I'm good, AA. I'll take that on. I'm with a few of my road dogs. We're smoking Marlboros. We're looking at the young girls coming in as we do, you know. And he says, well, it's on step 8 and 9. And I just froze up. And I said, well, I made my list, but I haven't made any amends. No hesitation, God speaking through this postman. And he just tapped me on the back and he said, go make a few amends. You got a few days. Let us know how they turn out. And he walked away. And the guys that I was with said, oh, and we'll be there to watch. You know, everybody was going to come. It was a Saturday. And so I made amends to Mom, Dad, my sister. And then I had a letter that I wrote to my grandmother that I stole that money from that I told you is one of the things that blew a hole in my soul. And I didn't know where the grave was because I didn't go to the burial. I went to the wake, but I went to the bar instead of the cemetery. But I knew the section, and I drove up, and I parked my car, and I got out, and I started walking the roads, and I'm walking and walking and walking. I'm looking at my watch. I got to go to this meeting. And fellas, I'm telling you, it's a program of honesty. I was not there to make amends with my grandmother. I was there to have at least 4 amends to talk to at the meeting and sound good. Amends weren't really hitting me that way just yet. And I'm in the back corner of the section, and I said, I got to go to the meeting. And I start walking up on a diagonal through the graves. And if this, where we're standing is my car, this is my grandmother's headstone. I parked right next to it. And I stopped, and the hair on my neck stood up. It was a brilliant sunny day there, and people in there and everything. And I took this letter out, and it was like 2 paragraphs. It was very brief. George was awesome for me. No grandiosity stuff, just what's on your mind, you know. And I took that letter out, and I can read. I'm a literate guy, and I couldn't get it out. nose starts running. I'm blubbering like a little girl that you just took a toy away from. People are looking at me, and I can't read this thing. I had to calm myself down and breathe. And then I read it, and it was, "Grandma, I'm so sorry that you saw the boy that you did when you left this earth. Breaks my heart that I lied to you. You did everything for me, and I threw it back in your face. But I believe that even now, you hear me, and I'm praying. And I'm going to do better, and I believe you can see me. I'm going to make you proud, Grandma," or something to that effect. I don't remember getting in my car. I don't remember going to that meeting. I shared for 15 minutes staring at a beeper on amends. But what I do remember is 10 guys came up to me after that meeting and said, "Whatever you're doing, don't stop. Something's going on with you. You're changing. You're not the guy that we met just 2 years ago." And that's where, in the book, it says our outlook on life will change. I can point back to that moment, reading that letter at that grave. It was so impactful to me at that point that if you haven't done something like that, talk to Dad. If we're all connected, if there's no outside of the circle, if we're all there, the spirit doesn't die, the body does. That'll heal you. Just go somewhere quiet. Get yourself in that state. Tell your dad what you have to tell him. He'll hear you. I believe he'll hear you. Thanks.
Thanks, Don. All right. In the service manual, there's 12 concepts. There's also 6 warranties. Why are only 12 concepts and now 18? Because the 6 warranties are one body of work, and they're not individual concepts. It's one body of work that's embedded in Article 12, which is Concept 12, and that's how Bill wrote them. So that's why there's not 18. I don't know if that helps you.
My service sponsor.
Thank God I don't have to. Oh, never mind. All right, Tommy. What level of honesty do you look for given in relationships at AA, work, or at home?
That I give.
What level of honesty do you look for or give in relationships at AA, work, or home? And home.
In giving, there's nothing better than that. My ideal for myself is 100% rigorous. I mean, it's not always comfortable, but, and how I say it is more important sometimes than actual content. You know, you can say the truth without hurting somebody. I don't want to hurt anybody with the truth, but there's a way to present things, even to my wife. I just have to realize that she's not businesslike like I am. So I can't go at her like an executive. I have to go like to her with a husband and tell her the truth about something at the house or something with me. In relationships at work, they like myself are sick too. And I'm trying to practice principles. They don't have a reason in their life to practice these principles. So I'm pretty forgiving. In AA, I am 1,000% forgiving. I have lied to every sponsor I have had. I have lied from the podium. I have done things in AA that a sober man shouldn't do. So who am I to judge AA? But now if you go to family, I have expectations on them that I shouldn't have, because they're doing the best they can. Only one of us, well, my wife and my son, made AA. But the other three, they're just chugging along doing the best they can. So if they tell a lie or something, I shouldn't be so critical with them. And I'm not verbally critical with them. I didn't punish the kids when they lied when they were younger and stuff. But I do have a disappointment when they do it, and that's not even justified. They're doing the best they can. But for me, it's rigorous honesty. It's the only way I can look at that.
Yeah. I love in how it works when it says, some of us suffer from grave emotional mental disorders, but we do recover. But they do recover. I'm paraphrasing. If they have the capacity to be honest. So here's the question for this guy or whoever wrote this: do you have the capacity to be honest with yourself, right? And if I can't, then what's the problem, right? What level? There is no level. Rigorous honesty, is that a level? Half-truths, is that a level? What am I looking for in my relationships, in AA, work, at home? What is your motive behind all this? Do I want to be honest or I don't want to be honest? So, I got to ask myself, am I even capable of being honest? And if I can't or I won't, that's another discussion. All right, Tommy. Somebody glued this one. Okay. All right. You mentioned the service sponsor. What's that about? Well, the service sponsor is nothing more than a guy that guides you through the service structure if you're involved in a service structure. You know, we just had a memorial Zoom meeting for my service sponsor, a guy by the name of John Quinn, who died on December 11th, Bill Wilson's sober date, last year, and we just had his first year anniversary, and they had this meeting, and I'll tell you, John was a really unbelievable guy. Tommy knew him real well. We played a lot of golf together, and John never said to me when I got involved in service to read the traditions, read the concepts, read the service manual. I must have played 1,000 rounds of golf with this guy, and all he ever talked to me about in a golf cart was about the structure and AA and things like that. It was his experience, you know, and he just guided me, you know. It wasn't like Bob or any other sponsor I had in the past. I had questions, I went to John. John, I don't understand. When I was the delegate, when I was an area chair, you know, it's just another tool to use in the toolbox, the spiritual toolbox. If I didn't understand somebody, I had someone in my arsenal to help me walk through something maybe I didn't understand. And I want to tell that story that we like. I got to tell you something about this guy, because he was really important to me. Big guy, 6'6", you know, just a real beacon, you know. He would never be doing something like this. He would never be breaking down a book. That wasn't him. But he was involved in service. And he was a trustee at large United States. And there's a world meeting that goes on every 2 years. And this particular year was in Berlin, Germany. And the Literature Fund was just being created, where other structures around the world didn't have the money for literature. There was a fund to fund so you could have literature translated in whatever language you want. Big books, whatever. Big books are translated in 93 languages today. You know, there's about 24 more translations going on. And he's in Berlin, Germany, and this tall African man stands up. He has the African garb on. He says to the body, he says, there's no big book written in Swahili. And John stands up and says to him, yeah, we have a book in African. He goes, that's not our language. It's a different language. And John took it under his wing to get that as an advisory reaction, blah, blah, blah. And John, on his desk, if you ever went into his house, was the first printing of the first big book in Swahili. You know where that comes from? The dollars in the basket. So if your money you think your money's not doing something, that's where our money goes. All right? Just a little story about him.
Yeah, so, you know, everything Jim said about, Jim is my service sponsor, and he's been that probably for about 10 years. But I have to tell you, when I decided to ask just Jim to, if he would do that for me, I had hung around with Jim enough, and his wife, and been to their home group, and I liked what he had. And it was just a way to bring another man in, without cheating on my sponsor. And, you know, I'm not playing two lines here. Jim has a role in my sobriety first of all, he's a road dog, and he'll tell me the truth. He's brutally honest. But with the service structure, he came up to delegate and everything, and I haven't done that work yet. I've done a lot of general service work. I've been in general service for over 22 years, intergroup for 7 years of my sobriety. But when he was the delegate and the big language big book was coming out and all, he gave me all the behind the scenes to that. And it made it so much easier to understand. And I didn't fall for all the gossip and everybody bashing them, you know, when they changed the preamble and all that stuff. Like, I understood what was going on because of Jim. So it's a valuable tool, but it's also a way to bring another guy into your inner circle. And I just thought it was great. Thanks.
Okay, the more I meditate and feel God's presence, the less motivation I have to build a business and provide money for my family. This scares me. You're a businessman. What would you say to this young man?
And so it should. Am I talking to my spiritual advisor, my sponsor, and my AA folks about that? Am I a little delusional in my spiritual practice, or am I going to be a monk? What's going to be the thing? We have to. God has given us all gifts to earn or not to earn and serve. But what's that role? I don't know what your role looks like. But if it's just a way of thinking I'm going to rise above my monetary needs or the need to provide for my family, I think that might be a little bit delusional. There has to be something coming into the family. That's just a fact. or is there some relief there? And you get your wife on board to say, I really want to practice these principles and do this or that, and she's on board with it, maybe you get some assistance or something like that. But I would be running that past my sponsor and the men in my life to see what it is. Is it just sloth, you know, procrastination, sloth in five syllables? Is it fear keeping me from doing that? I might be meditating on certain things and not realizing I'm wrapped in fear about this new business. You know, so I always like to run things against guys that I respect and trust here that have been down this road a little further, because there's a lot of things I don't see when I'm doing that. And me, meditating, that's still me with me. So I don't know if those words are coming from God or if I'm doing the ventriloquist thing, putting God's words, what I want in my stomach, and it's coming back up at me. I can do that too. So I would just check that with the guys in my life.
Oh, we're getting a little service-y today. What's the best way to get involved in general service, and how is this different from service at meetings? I was 19 years sober, and we started my home group. We'll be celebrating 20 years a couple of weeks. And we were a meeting, and we became a group. I hope you get to know the difference between that. And we needed a GSR, and I wasn't raising my hand because I'm not doing that crap. No way. That's what I thought. And all of a sudden, my hand started to go up. And did you ever have this conversation? What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? That's what happened to me. And before you know it, I'm a GSR for my home group, 19 years sober, and I don't know anything about service outside the group. Sad to say, that's just the way it was. But what I didn't see, that God was putting me on a path to a different place. And as I started to go down that service structure and meet certain people like John and other people like that, you know, I started to see the real importance of why we do what we do, which is might be a little different than what some of the service work we do in a home group. Yes, we carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers that shows up at our doors. We pull them into the fray. We get them in the middle of the herd. We maybe give them a job cleaning ashtrays, washing floors, putting up chairs, making coffee, whatever that is. But general service work is a little bit more, I don't want to say different level, a little bit more deeper. So what I would suggest, if you are interested, there's a few, and from this area, we got a couple of men in here, Eric and Richie, talk to them. Go to a district meeting. You guys familiar with the set-aside prayer? God, please set aside everything I think I know about general service. Open my mind to a new experience and let me see some truth. Not everyone's built for general service work. That's the truth. But if you're interested, go fishing. And maybe God has you put you on another path like he did with me. Because I'm only doing this for 2 years, I said to myself. 19 years later when I rotated, the greatest experience I've ever had, along with this, of carrying a message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Because we're not doing it for this, the people in here, like I said last night. Not here to ensure our sobriety, we're here. It's for the guy right now that's somewhere in this town that doesn't know that you're in here with an answer to his problem. How do we get to that guy? We get to that guy through committee work. We get to that guy through literature. We get to that guy through H&I. Bringing me Tom Iverster, if you guys ever heard of Tom I. Tom I was a guy from Southern Pines, North Carolina. Tom was a guy, he died at 68 years of sobriety. Tom had, he killed two people, was in prison. He got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous in prison. And when he got out, he got involved with corrections work. And before you know it, Tom started to work at this facility. And before you know it, Tom became the warden of the facility that he was jailed in. Can't do that in the United States anymore, right? And Tom would say this all the time. And this is kind of just a cheerleading thing. But if you don't want to go back to where you came from, bring a meeting into that place. If you don't want to go back to treatment, bring a meeting into treatment. You don't want to go back to jail? Get involved with corrections and bring meetings behind the walls. Because there are people, from my own experience, that I know that are freer behind the walls than some people that are on this side of the wall, right? Because of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of work to be done in AA, that's for sure. So if you're fishing, Eric's right here. Richie's right there. If you're in this neighborhood, they'll help you greatly. The right time to think about sex is during sex. Yeah. I can't wait for this answer.
I think about it at all the wrong times. I don't know what was meant by that statement, so I'll leave it alone.
Yeah, I don't either. We're old. All right, Tommy, getting near the end. How can we move past or through overwhelming shame for seemingly unforgivable behavior? In talking the real bad society might want you to die. I'm talking the real bad society might want you to die or go to prison shit. You feel impossible to do the I love you meditation. Kind of think God will forgive us for anything, even the most worst things in the world. But to sit in a room like this and withhold that stuff and not talk about that stuff, say with a sponsor or a closed-mouth friend or a confidant or someone or even a therapist outside of the rooms, please don't try to do this on your own and try to figure this out, whatever that is, by yourself. It's not going to work. And it will probably bring you back to a drink or even something more serious than that. So I would suggest if you're really sitting on something that's an act of shame or guilt or remorse or any of that stuff, and you can't open with your sponsor about that or a close friend, like say like Tommy and me, then maybe you need to get some outside help to talk about this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't corner the market on wellness all the time. But if this is really troublesome, I would suggest that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I can read between the lines and think of, you know, there's things that when I heard in a fifth step, I basically went into prayer, not to judge the person that was sharing it with me, not to change my facial expression, because it's not something I have done. I don't have experience with that. But I could tell you my stuff, some of the stuff that I've shared with you now, and I've shared it all with a couple of sponsors and many men, and Jesus, I've done it in front of auditoriums of people at this point, to me was the worst thing in the world. If it has a name, the crime or the guilty thing or the shameful thing you did, if it has a name, if it's in the dictionary, somebody has done it before. So don't hold that into yourself, because the reason I talk about the stuff that is shameful, guilty, where I feel less than and all that, because I always get a few men to call me or want to talk to me about that thing. So my worst guilt, my worst shame, my worst deviant stuff has been helpful to others, and it hasn't gone fully away. It hasn't. I still can wince a little bit when I think back because I can put myself there. But it lessens. It lessens. And then it's actually turns into an asset for you. Yeah, but don't hold that into yourself. There's men here. You just find the right guy in your home group. If it's not your sponsor, you probably need another sponsor. A closed mouth person, they really won't judge you. They might be a little thrown off by it if it's really horrendous in society's eyes. But the fact that you're willing to put this question in a basket in a men's retreat says that that's not the guy you are. It's something you did. We were all pretty sick. I'm just looking at you guys. I can picture there was some debauchery going on when you guys were out there. Come on, fellas. We're here at a spiritual retreat, trying to get closer to God, opening ourselves up man to man. We're not those guys anymore. We're just not. That's the lie we tell ourselves, that I'm always going to be that piece of shit. No, you're not. No, you're not. Pieces of shit don't come to things like this. So, you know, cut yourself a little slack, but talk about it with somebody.
It is a powerful question. You know, I'm just rereading it, and I think that's why Father Larry's here for you right now, a recovering priest who probably could guide you in the right direction with this kind of stuff, whatever it is. You know, and like Tommy just said, our dark past comes greatest asset. Some of the things I heard in footsteps that I thought, or somebody would share with me, you know, I'm like, you know, I never did that, but, you know, Joe did that. And maybe you want to go have a conversation with Joe on how he got past that, right? I mean, that's one of the tools we have is this thing of a fellowship, of, you know, a bond with each other that we can get through anything. But please don't sit here with that. I have a strained relationship with my biological father who lives on the other side of the country. How would I go about my amends?
Well, I'm going to assume typical father-son
stuff. Yeah, daddy issues. Oh, I don't want to say that. That sounds... Well, if he's with your mom, or if he's with stepmom or he's by himself, maybe just be willing to walk through that fear and make a phone call and just say, hey, I was thinking about you, and then allow God to take over that conversation, you know. But somebody has to make the first move. And if you really want that amends, if you really want to heal that relationship, if you really want to talk to your father, or you just want to do it because it'll make you feel better, right? I mean, so, you know, strained relationship, what does that mean, really? You haven't talked in 5 years, you haven't talked in 20 years, you haven't talked in 50 years. I mean, you know, and what's the wedge that has been put between you two? You know, did you steal off them? Did you hit them? I mean, why is it strained, right? But to open up that door and have conversation and then hopefully, you know, allow God to heal that relationship. Sometimes it's just a simple phone call. And if you're afraid to make a phone call, how about a nice letter or a card? It's Christmas. Why don't you mail a nice card? Hey, Dad, thinking about you. Let's talk after the holidays. Some simplicity.
Yeah, I think one burden that we have when we come in here and things now are objectionable to us, Dad's not in a spiritual program of recovery. I'm assuming that. It's on us. We're the ones that have to take the lead. You know, it might not be as strained as you think it is. Maybe Dad's thinking on the other side of the country, man, I would love to hear from my son this Christmas. I know I went Christmases without talking to my son, and it was brutal. And I was the cause of it. I just got 3 times as drunk on Father's Day, 4 times as drunk on Christmas, and blocked it out. But, you know, the note, the call, depending on the circumstances, what you think might go apart, talk with your sponsor about it. There are some bad men out there. There's no two ways about it. And there's some frightened men now. Let's say frightened men. That might not want to have that conversation because they're not comfortable with it. But man, I'm a father. I would want to hear from my son. I would want to hear from my son. So I don't know what the situation is, but you got some action to do. You know, there's answers there. It's not a big mystery, and a lot of us have done that.
And I always say to the guys I sponsor, can you live with the regret of not calling him? God forbid he ever passed away. I didn't live with that for the rest of your life, right? What's the worst that could happen? I'll hang up on you. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it like that. Sorry.
Just what he was doing good.
Yeah, just. I'll tell you the problem. I'm in California, and I just had a California drink. It was 4 espressos and almond milk. I never had that in my life before. I'm like that Jack Russell right now, running around the walls. Like I didn't have a heart attack up here. What is the single most spiritual thing you have heard in the rooms of AA? Yikes. That list goes from here to my house. But I was thinking about this question. I just read it, and I don't know why this popped in my head. I've been on a lot of retreats where a father and a son are at that same retreat. And that is some of the most spectacular, unbelievable things I've ever seen when, you know, the son is up here or the dad comes up, or they're a family member. I don't know, I get moved so much, especially in my home group. You know, at the end of the month, we have a monthly anniversary, and the families are all there, and little Johnny boy is going to get his pin or his coin, and man, to see the family beam, and just to see the hope that they have. I don't know. I mean, that really tugs at my heart all the time when I see that. I mean, we can give you 1,001 saints I've heard from speakers through the years, but really, it's just about the family coming back together again, getting healed. I think that's the most, you know, spiritual thing of love and compassion and just all that stuff that we get to do in here, and how we can recreate our lives in Alcoholics Anonymous. So it isn't one like line, a good line from Bill or Jay or Steve. You know, you hear a lot of good lines in Alcoholics Anonymous that really like move you, but you know, to actually see families reunited under a roof in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the joy of that, that for me has been the greatest thing I've seen in AA.
Yeah, impossible to point to one, but I'll tell you two real quick. One is Bob Bazance's talk on 6 and 7 in 1990. When I went through my first second bottom here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I got that CD mailed to me from Peter Marinelli. And I put it in the car, and it was exactly where I was. And I was crying on the streets of Brooklyn in a suit and tie. A Jamaican cop came over to me. "You are all right, man." I said, "Ari, Ari." I'm like, "Oh, all messed up." But just a great thing that another man was telling my story was a big spiritual experience for me. But the other was my sponsor, Joe, when he was dying. We got all the guys. It was 13 of us that he was sponsoring. And we got together on Zoom. And we had a meeting every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. And we knew he was dying. It was going to be less than 6 months. So we did this every week. We didn't know this until afterwards, but his wife would have to prop him up, and he wouldn't miss it. And he was declining quickly. Towards the end, he couldn't even speak on the meetings. And then I said to the guys, I said, "Why don't we have all the guys we sponsor come on and thank Joe?" 2 weeks before he died, we had 85 men on that Zoom meeting. The only sharing was thank you. And Joe sat there, and he could barely cry. That's how what rough shape he was in. But there was two guys, Zoom, in the upper two boxes, right? Jay Green. One kid younger, one old man. And almost everybody shared, and the guy started putting up the emojis to share. And the kid, John Green, Joe worked with and read the vision for you on like Tuesday night or Wednesday night, and Joe died on Thursday. This was the Saturday before that. The senior man, Jay Green, was his father. And he said, "Joe, I don't know you, but I know all about you. And I sponsor your sponsor. Thank you for saving my son's life." Just amazing, amazing stuff that happens here. It's just wonderful.
Man, we're good at time management. Last question at 5:30. What's the difference between your will and God's will? Well, that's pretty simple. God doesn't think he's me.
That was pretty good. We'll end on that note. That was good.
That was good.
Thanks, fellas.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in other speaker tapes or CDs from AA or Al-Anon, please contact us at Sound Solutions, toll free 1-877-893-2777, or visit us on the web at soundsolutionsrecording.com. We are also available to cover your recording and sound system needs. Thank you for allowing us to be of service and carrying the message.